I'm Cara Laurence. I'm joined by three guests this morning to talk about a Sunday event, the Messiah Sing, now in its 21st year. I'd like to welcome music director of First Congregational Church and conductor for this concert, Michael Palmer.
Thank you, Cara.
Nice to have you here. Harpsichordist, music director of First United Methodist Church in Grand Rapids, director of Early Music Michigan, Eric Strand. Hello.
Good morning.
And we have alto soloist and section leader of the choir at First Congregation Church. That's Tammy Snyder-Knutson.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
So we'll get into one of the great pieces of all time this hour and the reasons we go back to it over and over again. Michael, first of all, tell listeners some of the details and when and where and how.
Well, this is the 21st Community Messiah Sing, and I'm grateful, terribly grateful to be part of this event. This is my third season, and it's co-sponsored with the Michigan Festival of Sacred Music and First Congregational Church, and it's Sunday, this coming Sunday, November 27, and it begins at 4 p.m. in the sanctuary at First Congregational Church. Doors open at 3:30, and we invite all listeners and all singers to come. If you're a singer and have a Messiah score, come and sing the wonderful choruses, and we'll have a couple of twists this year that we'll discuss a little later on. And if you don't have a score but would love to sing, we have scores to borrow.
Wonderful. What is your expected turnout generally?
The last few years, we've packed the sanctuary to its fullest. We've had as many as 350, both audience and singers, primarily singers, and usually about 250 to 275 singers, and then it fills the rest with audience members who just come and listen and enjoy the grand sound of that sanctuary.
I've noticed that community singing has become a lot more prevalent, or awareness has grown for this activity lately. Mm-hmm. I've seen it at the movies. I've seen it at Miller Auditorium. I've seen it from Western Michigan University, bringing together people to sing the Foray Requiem and other works over the summer.
Right.
What's going on?
Well, I think it's a recognition that people love to sing. We carry our instruments wherever we go as singers, and it speaks to the soul of the person. And there's a real hunger, I think, out there for being part of something bigger than just yourself. And this is one of those events. And
about the whole, it's a light commitment. You're not joining a choir for a whole season.
That's true. It's come and sing as you can, enjoy as you will, and take it all in. We're fortunate enough to have a wonderful 16-17 member orchestra made up of professional musicians from around Kalamazoo, part of the KSO, professional musicians that are connected to the Western Michigan University faculty. And they have come and have been part of this. Eric informed me just a few moments ago that I think this is your 15th Messiah Sing. Perhaps, but many have been part of the Messiah Sing from its inception and have just come and enjoy the experience.
I'm also wondering if you might, okay, if you look at the music to the Messiah, it's still one of the most challenging pieces you could try to put together. And yet there's kind of a folk aspect to it. It's owned by the people. At this point, can you make a case for it being a folk work?
Oh, well, I think so. I think as well as this piece is known throughout the world, and as many more people take place or take time to be part of one of these community Messiah Sings, it just becomes part of the fabric of the community.
Can you speak to that, Eric?
Well, Handel certainly was playing to a strength in England, that is, the choir is critical to kind of English society. And so I think once the English people adopted Messiah as something for the people, for the representing, you know, the chorus, then I think it spread like Wi-Fi. And the interesting thing, though, that the Messiah sing-along history is sort of distinctly American, and it actually predates sing-alongs of Messiah in England. And so, although the English may want to, they've kind of criticized America, saying, you know, well, of course it's American because they think they can do anything. nevertheless, I think, you know, it's because the chorus is so central to it, I think that people feel like we can sing along.
Agreed. And this year we'll take a little different twist with the Messiah Sing. We're actually pulling two of the most difficult choruses from the lineup this year, but we're asking the chorus to join in their specific sections. For instance, we're asking the tenors to sing along with the tenor soloist on Comfort Ye, which is the recitative before that before every valley. And we're asking the basses to sing The People That Walked in Darkness with the bass soloists. And the sopranos and the altos, we're asking them to sing He Shall Feed His Flock, altos with the alto, with Tammy and, as the alto soloist, and then modulate to the soprano solo, and asking the sopranos to sing along with Corlin Longer-Schreck, our soprano soloist. So it's a give and take this year a little bit of a twist.
Why don't we start here with a chorus of some kind? What do you suggest?
Well, let's go to the chorus. Let's see here. For unto us a child is born. This is one of the great choruses. It's planted right in the center of part one, and it's a beautiful, beautiful chorus, and one that everyone loves to sing.
For unto us a child is born. That's the first highlight we've heard from the Messiah here, along with Michael Palmer, Eric Strand, and Tammy Snyder Knutson. Should I say the K?
Knutson.
Okay. Tammy, you are the alto soloist for the Messiah Sing, which I should say once again is this Sunday at 4 o'clock at First Congregational Church in downtown Kalamazoo. How long have you been section leader for First Congregational?
I actually just started this fall, and it's been a really, really enriching experience to walking into the church and not being sure exactly what I needed to do. And it's my first true section leader position, and I have never felt so welcomed into a place. And you feel that as a chorus member, as a soloist, as a member of the congregation. It's such a welcoming place. And that's why I'm so excited that we're opening our doors to do something like this so the community can come in and feel that welcome feeling as well.
What are your responsibilities as a section leader?
Really, a lot of it is leading by example, really knowing my music, having the artistry down, really understanding what I'm singing, why I'm singing it, and having that energy and that motivation trickle through the section as well, being there to help with any questions or concerns that my section has and being a support to them as well.
And tell me, what is it about the Messiah that you find special? Have you performed this before as a soloist?
I have, but funny enough, as a soprano soloist.
So what's happened to your voice?
I've gotten older.
that does happen.
It does, yes. But my favorite thing truly about this, I was exposed to the Messiah probably when I was about 13 years old. And to me, in where I had grown up, I was not really exposed to a lot of classical, Baroque music, anything of that nature, any early music really at all. And that was my first true exposure to that. And it was really exciting to me to be like, oh, I'm singing something so different other than singing pop tunes. Mm-hmm. And that's carried with me. So every time I sing it, it takes me back to being 13-year-old Tammy looking at the score going, what do I do? But it's such an exciting piece of music to be able to sing. I learn new things from it every single time I perform it as well.
Where did you study voice?
I have my bachelor's degree in voice and in theater from Saginaw Valley State University, and I got my master's degree from Western Michigan University in voice performance.
Okay, so yeah. You worked with the faculty, Kim Adams, and
correct, yep.
Wonderful. How long since you graduated? Because you still look very young to me.
I graduated in 2012.
Okay. Yep. And you stayed in West Michigan?
Yes. Yep. I just moved to Kalamazoo about a year and a half ago.
Fantastic.
Yeah. One of the delightful things about Tammy is that she has fit in so well at First Congregational and has been as welcoming as she has been welcomed. But she's also has some additional responsibilities. One of the great programs that has come back to First Congregational is the Choral Scholar Program. This is a program that I actually was a participant in way back in the 1970s. And the church has a history of having student scholars as section leaders, and that dates back to the early 60s. And about 15 or 20 years ago, we moved away from that and hired resident section leaders. So we didn't have to worry about the school calendar so much as the students going home during the high holy day season. Yeah. And this fall, we brought four new scholars on board at First Congregational, and one of Tammy's responsibilities is to help mentor that scholar so that they learn how to become that leader in the section and move on from our church to hopefully other professional positions as a section leader or as a music director. So she's really stepped into a dual leadership role, not only of the section, but also of mentoring our new scholars. And incidentally, all of our scholars this year are serving as understudies for all of the soloists of the Messiah Sing, which is a first for the Messiah Sing as well.
It's beginning to dawn on me how important these four core singers are in any church choir, the soprano, the alto, the tenor, the bass leaders. Do you music directors ever get together and talk about how lucky you are to have strong section leaders, and maybe you're in a situation where you don't have them and you're asking other friends about where they can find them? And...
Well, Eric has been a music director for many years, and Eric, I know Eric and I have spoken about the strength of our choirs from time to time, but haven't really discussed the whole section leader aspect. This is the first church I've served where I've had paid section leaders, and I'll tell you what, this is an experience that is beyond that is just a glorious experience to have that kind of talent.
Sounds wonderful, and you're very very smart to not only to have those leaders who are professional musicians, because they have to. You've got to have an outlet for those who have studied music and those who are trying to apply their craft, to have them, Tammy, to have the opportunity to work, but also to train other up-and-coming singers so that it becomes this feeding program. Really, it just lifts all ships in the section, and it's a very helpful thing to have leaders. You have to have really leaders in order to function.
Right.
And there are so many singers who sing very well, but only if they have someone next to them singing well.
Yeah.
And so that, that's fantastic. And so we get that kind of critical mass. And even in the Messiah sing-along, it's kind of a experience of collectively we can do this. We can be heroic together. We don't have to pull it off ourselves.
That's right.
And so
that's right.
So yeah, that sounds wonderful. And I would highly recommend that the paid section leaders or small stipend is nothing to be afraid of in right. a church choir situation.
Yeah. And we'll have all of our soloists up front, our four main soloists, but we'll also have our four scholars in each one of the sections helping to lead the sections during the Messiah Sing on Sunday as well.
That sounds wonderful. It's at 4 o'clock Sunday. It's free for all. If you have your own score of Messiah, you should bring it along, but there will be some scores available.
There are. We have several churches in the area have been gracious to donate scores to loan to those who are in need of scores. It's been wonderful.
We should also add that this is part of the Michigan Festival of Sacred Music events for this year.
Indeed.
You can find out more at their website.
At their website.
mfsm.us. Right. Let's hear another highlight, Michael.
Well, let's go to our alto soloist, and this is... this is Behold, a Virgin Shall Conceive, the recitative, and then O Thou That Tellest Good Tidings, which leads into a chorus as well.
From the Messiah, we heard a recitative, a solo, and a chorus. My guests are conductor Michael Palmer, harpsichordist Eric Strand, and alto soloist Tammy Snyder-Knutson, all participating this Sunday in the Messiah Sing. Let's talk about a little bit about Handel's way of organizing the Messiah. We just saw an interesting mini structure within the overall structure.
True. The structures, part one is primarily a prologue, setting the scene with the major prophecies of the Messiah coming from both peaceful and violent ways. We've heard some of the sublime ways that Handel set the score, and we'll hear some of the more violent ways in just a few moments. But the librettist, Charles Jennens, uses direct narrative only once in part one. It's fascinating. He does that a little later in part one with the soprano recitatives before moving into the chorus, Glory to God. And it begins with, and the angel said unto them, and it's the angel's pronouncements to the shepherds of Christ's birth. And then it concludes with references, triumphal entry into Jerusalem amidst the blessings of his followers. That's really how part one ends. And we concentrate primarily on part one because it is known as the Christmas portion. Use part one plus the Hallelujah chorus. And so that's where the last few years we have spent our time. This year we're branching out into the second part and bringing in one of the soprano solos that is just a beautiful, beautiful lilting solo with continuo and violin, and then we're bringing in one of the bass solos. That's it's a furious solo. It's Why Do All the Nations Rage, and we'll cue that up in just a few moments, and then really right before the Hallelujah chorus closes the second part, in the order of the Messiah, there's a tenor recitative and solo that is equally as furious. And so we're going to bring those solos in, combining it with some of the sublime pastoral settings, and hopefully balancing out the whole of part one, the whole of this concert this year.
So the narrative structure is sort of the events leading up to the birth of Christ, and then we go through the life.
And then in part two, it's the life of Christ. And Eric, you can jump in here as well, and then the crucifixion, and then finally the triumphal resurrection in part three.
That's excellent synopsis and summary. It doesn't have really a through plot necessarily. It's kind of mostly scenes, and so it's a bit of a departure from other oratorios in that it's more episodic and, as I say, it doesn't really quite have the exact traditional structures.
You know, we have enough time, I think, to hear from you on what function the oratorio has in music history. I mean, it's right up there with opera in terms of forces required in some ways.
Yeah, Handel, Italian, came to England with a lot of Italian opera and producing that. And when that started to become rather expensive and failing in a lot of entrepreneurial ways, he turned to oratorio. And this was, I believe, his sixth oratorio in that sort of series. And so he found another outlet for the work. This is often, in Handel's time, it was mostly associated with the Eastertide period. Hmm. And in Lent, they didn't allow sort of the Italian opera or that kind of thing. And so it was a way of fitting a niche of what was needed or asked for. And he found an oratorio, developing it, and coming from his dramatic sense of opera, you find that overlapping into his oratorio works.
The first performance was organized not in London, but in Dublin, I believe.
That's
as part of a benefit for an orphanage, and well-reviewed at the time.
Yeah, apparently it was quite successful. And yet, even at the time, I believe the dean of St. Patrick's Cathedral there in Dublin, Jonathan Swift, was trying to get his singers not to participate, thinking that it was a subject that wasn't really fit for the theater, and that too much secular overtones perhaps to the presentation of it. But he didn't prevail, and it was apparently, they say it was, 700 people maybe have attended it, and they encouraged the men not to bring their swords and the women not to wear hoop skirts so that they could fit more people into the
how wonderful,
to the hall, as it were. But he was quite successful, and he had spent quite a bit of time in Dublin presenting other works, and found a real starstruck audience in many ways there.
Well, and as with oratorio and opera, many of the sections go under revision, compositional revision, as performances play out. And it's so true of pretty much this entire oratorio that each of the sections, especially the soloist sections, went under different revisions as time went on. One of the solos that we're going to hear upcoming, Why Do All the Nations Rage, was originally a very short aria. And after the first performance of it, Handel elongated the aria because he liked it so much. And he had a bass soloist who could then sing it as well. Our soloists for The Messiah Sing are Corlin Longer Schreck, our soprano, and Tammy Snyder Knutson is our mezzo. Tenor, Howard Teachma, and bass, Joseph Schreck as well. And Joe Schreck and Howard and Corlin have sung each one of the Messiah Sings, one of the community Messiah Sings.
I wouldn't be surprised if they sang more than once a year in different productions.
Indeed. Yeah. They are terrific. All of our soloists are terrific to work with. We've been working in behind the scenes in rehearsals of late, and they are just wonderful people and wonderful professionals to work with as well.
Well, I would like to talk to Tammy in a minute about what is so special about his writing for voice, but why don't we hear this special Why Do All the Nations Rage?
This is from part two, near the end, Why Do All the Nations Rage?
Sounds so tricky. We're listening to music from The Messiah, and everyone is welcome to give it a shot on Sunday at 4 o'clock in The Messiah Sing. It is part of the season of the Michigan Festival of Sacred Music. You can find full details at mfsm.us. Handel, to me, is treating voices like they are violins or flutes or, you know, instruments who can simply finger the pitches along without any trouble. But this is your voice, Tammy. Mm-hmm. What the challenges in Handel are still as challenging as it gets.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the most challenging things about anything written by Handel is the fact that you go between these passages of beautiful, lilting legato lines, and then suddenly you're in these gigantic melismatic passages where you're wondering, where do I breathe? How do I articulate this particular passage? And I find that to be really exciting because it's almost like an elongated vocal warm-up, per se.
Or like the Swingle Sisters or vocal jazz these days or something.
Exactly. You get to approach this piece of music from so many different standpoints. And that's something that I thought that I really truly believe that Handel was just a master at. Is, yes, the writing is difficult for the voice. It is very instrumental in ways. But at the same time, the way that the vocal lines are written, though challenging, are still very melodic. They still make sense. So just being able to understand the structure of how that works on the page and translating that into the voice is something that can be really exciting to do, albeit challenging.
I've noticed that Handel also, we've talked about the overall structure of the piece. There are three parts, and they each have an internal story to them. There's also this idea that he often starts with a recitative, which is kind of simply the musical talking about, mm-hmm. about events or what's going to happen, and then a meditation or song sung by a soloist, and then the chorus joins in. It happens repeatedly in this? What do you think of that structure?
I mean, in my brain, to me, you have this declamatory section that is getting the idea out there. And then you have the arias, which are elaborating on that idea, expressing the emotion behind the idea. And then suddenly, because you have brought this idea out, you've brought charisma to it, too. You're telling this to the masses. The masses suddenly are, I'm joining in. I want to be a part of this. I want to share the story. I want to express how that makes me feel, too. So in my thinking, that's how I always approach it. I'm starting the idea, I'm building that idea out, creating that story, and then eventually we all join together to be able to share that as well.
What's an example of a place where you do that?
Well, a really good example of that would be O Thou That Tellest Good Tidings to Zion. You have that beautiful recitative at the beginning, Behold, a Virgin Shall Conceive. You go into that, the soloist then goes into O Thou That Tellest Good Tidings to Zion. And then from there, we lead right into that chorus section where the chorus is then re-expressing what the soloist has said. And to me, I think that's just a perfect example of how that build and that structure works to be able to express that idea.
Anything further on that as a conductor, Michael?
Well, it's
you must be looking at many different people during these sections.
Indeed. Indeed. It's fascinating, as Tammy was saying, it builds and builds and builds. And in that particular movement in particular, not only is the soloist moving the story along, but telling good tidings, and then the community is telling good tidings. And I'm in a position to help move that along as well, both in tempo and in masses. But it's wonderful to see it build and to experience how it builds from one to a few and then to many. And it's the same way with the orchestral accompaniment. The recitatives are sparsely accompanied, and then the solos are it's a little more rich, and then suddenly everything comes in together, and it's the community declaring those wonderful tidings. Mm. It's a particularly wonderful experience, spine-tingling in some ways.
I appreciate performances often that do connect up the movements in a dramatic fashion, that sort of take their cue from opera with with the recitative and aria, and when on the repeat of the aria, the da capo sort of thing, where the soloist ornaments or adds extra things. I mean, this is all so familiar to us. I think that's one of the appeals, of course, is that it's just so familiar. We know it so well that we're looking for interesting things that the chorus or the soloist might do. And as the harpsichordist, I'm actually probably one of the few that gets to improvise more than the other players. And so it's never the same for the harpsichordist, because the harpsichordist gets to elaborate and sort of have a running commentary, sort of, as it were, as opposed to the other instruments who have to kind of stick to most of the notes, well, sans ornamentation, of course.
And one of my great joys as conductor is to be able to stand in close proximity to Eric and watch him work his magic at the harpsichord in concert with Betsy Start, the executive director of the Michigan Festival of Sacred Music, is our cellist, and Anders Dahlberg from WMUK will be our bassist as well. And to watch those three work together is magical. And most of the time, the audience has no idea what's going on. And Eric is one of the finest musicians and finest people I've ever known, and to be able to be part of an ensemble with that level of character and musical commitment, musicality, is extraordinary for me especially, and I'm so grateful.
Well, you're being very kind. Thank
well,
you very
much. It's not kind. It's true. It's just wonderful.
We're complimenting each other here on WMUK. Don't forget to put the Messiah Sing on your calendar for Sunday at 4 o'clock. I'm sure that's something many families have done for years as well as the performers.
They have, and of particular note for this year, and I'm actually praying that my wife isn't listening to this presently, But our family of about 20 will be attending the Messiah Sing for the first time. Part of a surprise birthday gift. And actually, I know she's not listening because she's teaching her class right now.
I got lucky there.
Yeah. And it's going to be wonderful. We have children as young as 15. One of my nieces will be there as 15. And then Barbara's mother, who is 89 years old, she still comes and still she can't hold the score anymore, but there, she still sings.
There's also, it's a small point, but the sanctuary is usually bedecked with garlands for the season.
It
right,
is indeed.
By this time.
It is indeed, and we're actually we're decorating on Friday this week, getting it set and ready to go. And it's a wonderful English cathedral space, and we even have a portrait of Handel up on the wall with score in hand. So it's just a wonderful space to perform the Messiah.
Oh, maybe you can convince Eric to wear a wig as well.
No, I won't.
Powdered wig.
No, I won't do that.
Well, last thoughts, Tammy?
I'm just absolutely thrilled to have the opportunity to be able to do this, and I think it'll be an exceptional opportunity for the community to be able to come in and sing this absolutely wonderful masterwork.
What final thoughts might you have to say, Eric?
Well, for you weekend warriors out there, please warm up in advance. Get your voice going this week so you don't come and injure something, but just have a good time.
Indeed. That's great. Well, it's Sunday, November 27th at 4 p.m. at First Congregational Church, the Community Messiah Sing, sponsored in part by the Michigan Festival of Sacred Music. And we're very fortunate to have that co-sponsorship with Betsy Start as the executive director, and then First Congregational United Church of Christ. Come one, come all, bring your score, borrow a score, come sit, enjoy, listen, and...
And if an hour of convivial conversation with Michael Palmer, Eric Strand, and Tammy Snyder Knudsen didn't convince you, maybe this last chorus will convince you.
Well, and the last chorus is the last chorus. Hallelujah. We began with it. We'll end with it.
Well, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you all.